We're good?
Yep.
All right. I'm on. Good morning.
Good morning.
If you expected Grant, surprise, I'm here. We're going to do a little gardening this morning. Any serious gardeners out there? Anybody? Got a few? Oh, my wife. There you go. Good, we got a few. Good, good. Well, you know, if you're out in the gardens, the flower beds, hopefully what I share with you today will follow you there. And as you're in there doing what you love to do, hopefully some of this will come to mind. And you can reflect on it. If you're not a gardener, I think it applies also. My apologies ahead of time. I didn't memorize it. An hour's worth of this, for my mind to memorize, is pretty much impossible. So I am going to do quite a bit of reading. I apologize for that. But I'm going to try to keep it as interesting as possible. What I hope to do is go through about 40 minutes of my talk, and I do have a TED talk. I don't know if we'll be able to do that or not, but at the end, if we have time and if we have the technology doing what it's supposed to do, we'll attempt it. I think it's something that's interesting. So let me take a few minutes to give you some background. If you don't know me, you don't know my family, I will introduce them. My wife Renee out here. We've been married for going on 40 years. I almost said 30, so it's a good thing. We have six children, three biological and four, and three adopted. Our three biological kids are Sarah, Joseph, and Andrew. They are married, seven grandchildren that they gave us, and they're all doing good, thank God. And we also have three adopted children. Laura, who's 27, Haley, who's 16, and Micah, who is 12. And while I'm on the subject, I just want to throw out there that God has blessed us with the ability to be adoptive parents. I think there's some blessings and joy that you get to feel an experience that doesn't come with biological kids. Biological kids have baggage and luggage, and you're connected to it, and you blame yourself, and you find fault. And it gets a little, you know, it can get a little messy, and it takes some of the joy away. But with adopted kids, and I like to think because we're adopted into God's chosen people, don't ever think that's less. There's a joy in being adopted that I feel as a parent that many people don't get to experience. So I thought I'd share that with you. I think it's an awesome thing. We also did foster parenting for 25 years. We did some medically fragile babies, and we did some teenage girls. It was good. It was challenging, but it was fulfilling, and we sent some people on their way with a little more than what they came with. So we were blessed through that also. As far as our farm goes, we have a small, really a 3.5-acre farm out in Wadsworth, Sharon Township. Little barn. We've got some goats and some chickens. A half acre of land that we garden. A couple of greenhouses, a high tunnel, and some other buildings. So that's kind of our deal. Regarding myself, my career has been up to a few years ago heating and cooling. I worked for a contractor in Barberton for 21 years as a technician and as a service manager. And then I moved on to a manufacturer in Cleveland where we made heating and cooling controls. I was kind of a tech support person for inside people and a lot of our customers. So it was good. It was very good. I enjoyed it. I was there for 13 years. I got to do some traveling. I got to do some training, public speaking that didn't come very easy, but it eventually became something that was fun and enjoyable. And although as I enjoyed the travels and seeing different parts of our country and meeting lots of different people, we realized several years ago that it was playing some havoc on Micah. Micah has some significant brain issues, although he's an awesome kid and you wouldn't know it if you talked to him. And he has a seizure disorder, and the stress that was coming on him by me not being there. Some of my trips took me out of the home for 4 days, maybe 3 days. And he started to have some seizure issues. And Renee being at home with that by herself was very challenging. So we started to think differently. might not be slides. I have 11 slides, but there you go. Gotta make
his
it
password
easy.
Is all zeros. Did you hear that?
That's Micah's iPad, by the way. It wasn't purchased that way, but it ended up being that. And he does magnificent with it, so he gets to use it. And I asked him if I can borrow it today. So anyway, back to that deal, the seizures. So, you know, employment changed. I really couldn't travel as much. That really fit what they wanted me for. They tried to turn me into a salesperson, not me. I can't sell. I am not about selling. So if you could buy something because I talked about it and you like what I talked about, that's great. But being on the phone trying to sell wasn't what I could do. So I parted ways with that company. I started some independent consulting for about a year or so. I had a lot of fun with it, had some good clients, really enjoyed that piece of that for a while. But it just seemed to dwindle. I didn't have the energy to put into it, and so we started considering the farming thing, which we were toying with already. We've gardened for years, and I've always dreamt of working from home. So over the past 4 years, this dream has finally come true in God's time and for His reasons. Our venture into organic market gardening, which is what they call this, would supplement my retirement income, provide the physical activity we needed to stay healthy, utilize our small farm in ways that fit our beliefs, and of the utmost importance, it would give Micah a trade to learn while spending time with his favorite dad. That's me. Micah's occupational and physical therapist team that have been working with him for several years have the summer farming season as a vital part of his therapy program. As many of you have been told by Micah, probably many, many times, yep, I'm my dad's farming helper. And that he is. And he's my biggest cheerleader. And there's days that I need that. Over the past 4 weeks, Renee and I have been participating in the discipleship study at Grant and Robbins. Haley also attends her own session at Brad and Megan Moore's and has also been sitting in at the Lutons with us. While at the study, we've been mentioning a few of our recently learned realities of the world of nature and how they parallel or align with spiritual truths. So about 3 weeks ago, Grant asked if I would share some of these as the teaching while he was away. After I started shaking, I said, yeah, I can do that. So my objective this morning is to share those parallels between gardening and spirituality, and to attempt, as Grant so skillfully does, to lay them side by side and pull out some spiritual truths. I do apologize if a bit of it sounds like a promotional talk on growing organic food. That's my present occupation and our focus for the past 3 years. It's also in this physical realm of nature that I occasionally unearth some spiritual analogies that I hope you will find insightful. I also warn you that when you seriously consider the spiritual connection to our natural world, you begin to bump into some New Age philosophies. This is not my intent. I realize that where you can find some truth in the New Age movement's beliefs is also where you can draw parallels between spirituality and nature. So as Grant warns you many times, please spit out any bones I might have missed. So I want to start with Genesis 3:17-19, which is my first slide. Come on, Tim.
I'm trying.
I think the iPad is a little bit older version, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It's your fault.
It's my fault. That's okay. So in Genesis, it says, "Unto the man he said, since you listened to your wife and ate from the tree, whose fruit I commanded you not to eat, the ground is cursed because of you. All your life you will struggle to scratch a living from it. It will grow thorns and thistles for you, though you will eat of its grain. By the sweat of your brow will you have food to eat, until you return to the ground from which you were made. For you were made from dust, and to dust you will return. As a grower of food, I have come to a much deeper understanding of this curse and the sweat that comes with it. I think last summer I sweated more than I ever did in my whole life. It was hot, it was humid, and it was difficult. I have also had much opportunity to contemplate the pre-fall beginnings and the new earth and new heavens reality as it pertains to producing our food. I often wonder and I imagine what it will be like when Yeshua returns. At times I do find myself becoming frustrated and stressed in doing what I love. My battling against weeds, pests, mildews, molds, soil deficiencies, and uncooperative weather conditions, along with the effects of aging and my physical being, can bring me down in days. That's when I need Micah to tell me I'm doing a good job. It's in those moments that my mind often wonders to what it will be like when man's sin is no longer an obstacle in God's intended creation. As much as I appreciate and enjoy God's creation, I don't consider myself a tree hugger of sorts, although I do believe we waste much of our natural resources on man's greedy endeavors. I also believe that we are not doing well in fulfilling our responsibility at being caretakers of God's beautiful and bountiful creation. We have become detached from what it means and what it takes to grow the food our bodies require. I wonder sometimes if the physical, emotional, and mental challenges we are dealing with in our culture today are perhaps the fallout we have brought on by circumventing the consequences of Adam's disobedience. Our food is no longer provided by the sweat of our brow, but by the faulty ingenuity of our corporate food industry. I wonder, have we shifted the cost to our children? In the past 3 years, Renee and I have attempted to come up to speed with the most recent teachings and ways of growing safe and nutritional vegetables. There is a well-organized and active movement to correct our food's production, nutritional value, and distribution. There's a well-organized and active movement to correct our food's production, nutritional value, and distribution. I said that already, sorry. This food movement is definitely gaining ground, but it will take the incentive and directive of market dollars to make the significant change that still needs to be achieved. In our endeavor, Renee has focused her efforts on medicinal herbs and providing the most robust germination and care for all of our vegetable plants that will transplant into one of our 6 gardens. I think she has 6,000 plants out there or something right now. I have the responsibility to get all those plants into the soil and help them produce fruit. My spare time over the past few years has been filled with learning the most recent wisdom on the health management of soil. And I will get to some spiritual pieces of this, I promise. The progression in soil research these days is unprecedented. Although much of what is being discovered is a continuation in many regards to what a few liberal thinkers were onto many, many years ago. I will introduce you to one of those out-of-the-box thinkers a bit later. 3 years ago, we attended our first OFA conference in Granville, Ohio. That's the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association. That's a group of people that have committed much of their mental abilities and time to correcting things in regards to food and how we grow it. I attended a few workshops on soil management and came away a couple years ago with the disturbing realization that we knew more about traveling to distant planets than we do about growing our own food. And that came from a guy from Ohio State, phenomenal presenter and very, very good. And that's what I walked away with when he was talking about what they're just discovering in growing food and what the soil has to play in that. And it really did bother me. As much as we can do with technology, I think we got ships on the way to Mars and whatever, we still don't understand what it means to grow food, to grow vegetables. We're learning it, though. Healthy soil is a living and vibrant ecosystem that provides a world of support for strong and robust plants. When plants have this network of support, they have the ability to withstand the challenges of a cursed ground and are able to produce nourishing fruit. God made it difficult to grow the food our physical bodies require. He didn't make it impossible. We have come to realize that much of the food that is being grown, processed, and sold today not only contains harmful chemicals, but also lacks many of the nutritional value that our bodies require to maintain a proper health. I hope to draw some parallels to this physical nourishment dilemma or crisis with some of the spiritual challenges that we as a society or culture are dealing with, or maybe not so much dealing with. As in his word, God has hidden below the surface of our soil many mysteries of his creation. In the Messianic movement, we have been slowly unfolding the hidden mysteries and wisdom of God's redemption story by refocusing our commitment to God's word with the balanced perspective of the whole Bible. The Bible is not two different covenants, one for a previous discarded agreement and a second new agreement not at all pertaining to the first. It's the whole of God's word that brings his light into the world. Biodynamics, second slide, Tim, if you would. A holistic, ecological, and ethical approach to farming, gardening, food, and nutrition. The biodynamic approach to soil management is a resource that began with Rudolf Steiner in the early 1900s and continues to be taught and relied on across the world. Anybody know Rudolf Steiner, ever read Rudolf Steiner? Very interesting person, Renee has. In his day, he was very spiritual, but he was very intelligent. He was involved with many, many different things. The farmers in Poland back in the late 1800s were struggling. Their soil was depleted. Their animals were not doing good. And so they called on Rudolf Steiner to help them. That he did. He spent quite a bit of time, developed a whole lecture piece that he gave to them. His spiritual connectivity kind of turned people off. But I think he was aware of things that many people aren't and can't be. And he tried, he spent, I think, the last 30 years of his life trying to portray some of that and trying to teach it as much as he could. But a lot of what he discovered, a lot of what he taught is still taught today. When we go to conferences, there's always people that are teaching on biodynamics and the things that Rudolf Steiner taught. Slide three, Tim. Oh, other way. There you go. That is a mycorrhizal hyphae. There's a little plant, little tree in there, and then the rest of that underneath it is a fungal network. That fungal network, they are realizing, is critically important to the plant's health. And it gets to the point where fungal network from different plants and different trees connect to each other. In a very similar way to the fictional movie Avatar, there is a communication network in the plant world. This is a fungal network that allows plants and trees to share nutrients, supplement their young, and their less fortunate trees that are in sunlight, and also send warnings of threats. Through this network, plants can also send out natural insecticides when pests are detected by neighboring plants. This network is only present and functional when soil nutrition and conditions are favorable. Mimicking a forest floor is the new model for what soil conditions need to be for this God-given helper to flourish and serve its host. It was shared in a soil workshop I attended this winter that this communication network, also known as the Wood Wide Web, was tested to determine its range and effectiveness. When I heard this, it kind of blew me away. I tried to find something on the internet that I could develop a slide off of, but I couldn't find anything. So they located a forest somewhere, I don't know where it was, that they knew had a very large fungal network. And they positioned monitors in different locations, you know, 50 feet away, 50 yards away, a couple hundred feet away. I know they had one at least 2 miles away, and I believe he said 4 miles away, but I don't know that for sure. And then they introduced into the soil, into one particular spot in the soil, a radioactive isotope. Within the speed of light, every sensor detected it. Yeah, it's amazing. It really, it truly is amazing. I call it the unseen helper because, you know, you don't typically see it. It's just a fungal thing. And there are fungal plants that are damaging to plants that will find a weak plant and completely dissolve it. But that's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. But there is also fungal networks and fungal plants that are helpers to plants. Soil makeup can be divided into, slide four, thank you. Soil makeup can be divided into three properties: physical, chemical, and biological. The biological piece is the whole fungal part. Fungal pieces and parts, microorganism, roots, biological activity, and organic matter. What I also learned 3 years ago is that the new model agricultural scientists had recently, the new model agricultural scientists, which are some of the scientists that we get to listen to, who are looking for better answers, for better ways to do this. They have realized that the farming industry's focus on soil health has been kind of a miss. The folks developing and selling the chemicals that the farmers use to boost productivity have pretty much ignored the smallest biological aspect of soil and focused on the more profitable chemical aspect. This incorrect focus began as early as 1903. For the past 100 plus years, food producers have been ignoring the life-giving aspect of soil biology and supplementing the plants, not the soil, with the infamous NPK fertilizers, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The most recent research has proven that although the biological piece is physically the smallest, it is actually the most vital to soil health. In many ways, the living biology of the soil is what feeds the plants by making minerals and nutrients available in a form that plants can fully utilize. Our modern industrialized farming practices have done much in the way of stripping the soil of the biological life-giving attributes while adding chemicals and changing the very genetic structure of the plants, resulting in food production filled with toxins and soil lacking in the nutrients our bodies require. Testing is not even available today to determine the negative long-term effects of playing with the gene pool of our food, changing the way God originally intended, although evidence points to the contrary. Slide five, Tim. There's a gal, Robin O'Brien. She did a TED Talk, extremely interesting TED Talk. She was a stock market analyst, and then kind of went home for a quick family rearing. She wanted to go back to her career, so she had four kids in 5 years. She was head of her class, analytical, just go get it, you know, let's have kids, do it, go back to work. And ended up with some medical issues with children, with her kids. One of them had allergies, and the doctor told her it's from the food. And that just baffled her. She couldn't let it go. She dug into it. That was probably, I don't know how many years ago that was, but she has committed the rest of her life to advocate for cleaning up the food that our kids are eating. And it's Robin O'Brien. If you just look up Robin O'Brien TED Talk, it's really worth watching. If you struggle with any kind of food allergies, issues that you might think might be food related, she probably affirm that that's probably what it is. Let me share a blog post I recently discovered that speaks well to this dilemma. And I like this gal's words and how she words it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share that, and then I'm going to turn it on its spiritual end. Only changing a few words, I'm going to reread it. I'll show it on the slide. And I find it very interesting how closely these two things relate. She calls herself Julie of Light Omega. It's a website. It's actually pretty decent. Very, very God-fearing person. Everything she does connects to God in nature. And this was called the spiritual nature of plants. Though much has become out of balance in the life of the plants of the earth, all can be restored through careful attention to the needs of living things, as if they were partners in the experience of life rather than objects. This shift in perception can do more than anything else to help the earth's natural healing power restore the life of plants, even in places where that life has become stripped or barren. It is in the human consciousness that carries the power of healing within itself to create a prosperous earth in which all of life can find a hospitable home and in which all of life is treated with reverence as part of the one from which it originates. So in changing a few words, Julie's quote, I just wanted to reflect a kind of a parallel dilemma in the spirituality of what I refer to as the assemblies, which is the church, the synagogues, all that mixed into one bag. So slide 7, Tim. Well, you got it already. Though much has become out of balance in the spiritual life of the assemblies, all can be restored through careful attention to the needs of God's kingdom, as if it is a partner in the experience of spiritual life rather than a place after death. This shift in perception can do more than anything else to help the assembly's healing power restore the spirituality of the faithful, even in places where spiritual life has become stripped or barren. It is the human spirit that carries the power of healing within itself to create a hall in which all the faithful can find a spiritual home and in which all the faithful are treated with reverence as part of the one from which it originates. I read that and I just saw that spiritual piece in it, and I wanted to connect the dots. Next slide, Tim. So what I came away from that is physically we have surrendered much of our nutritional needs to large corporations. Spiritually, we have surrendered much of our spiritual growth to the corporate church. Physically, we have surrendered much of our health issues to large pharmaceuticals. Spiritually, we have surrendered much of our spiritual healing to self-help books, social media, the entertainment industry, comfort foods, and whatever else works to numb our spiritual discomfort. I want to look a little bit at a comparison between holiness and organic certification. It works for me, I don't know. We are getting our organic certification this year. And I'm trying to remember if I should talk about that now or if I'm going to talk about it later. I get myself all screwed up here. But we weren't going to get organically certified. We didn't see the need. Our people that are buying our produce didn't really ask for it. But the more we listened to people like Robin O'Brien and a few other people that we heard, we wanted to support that movement. We believe in that movement. We believe in what they're doing. We have surprisingly found that many of the people that are on this path of trying to correct things are just very wonderful, intelligent people that just see the need and want to do something about it. So anyway, Paul's letter to the Gentiles in Ephesus warns of the practices of impurity and deception, and that they should pursue a new nature, truly righteous and set apart. Paul writes, "With the Lord's authority I say this, live no longer as the Gentiles do, for they are hopelessly confused. Their minds are full of darkness. They wander far from the life of God, the life God gives, because they have closed their minds and hardened their hearts against him. They have no sense of shame. They live for lustful pleasure and eagerly practice every kind of impurity. But that isn't what you learned about Christ. Since you have heard about Jesus and have learned the truth that comes from him, throw off your old sinful nature and your former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deception. Instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy." That's Ephesians 4, 17, 24. So in the discipleship group, we were strengthening, correcting, and bringing into balance some of our thinking and beliefs in regards to discipleship. We've been realizing that some of what we've been taught in previous years has been from a slightly misaligned or balanced focus or out of balance focus. Kevin Jeffrey, the author of the study book we are using, The Messianic Life, attempts to bring discipleship into a truer alignment with the ways and teachings of Yeshua. With these minor corrections, along with loving accountability, continued study, and renewed and refocused commitment, we can live a more fruitful and joyful life for Yeshua. I've learned over the past few years that my gardening beliefs, growing beliefs, are not aligned with what nature demonstrates actually works best. I needed to find my soil guy, someone that has walked the walk and talked the talk, and is now teaching what has been corrected and realigned with nature's truths. At the conference this year, I found my soil guy. I call him my soil rabbi. Dan Kittredge, he's the founder of the Bio-Nutritional Food Association. He's out in Massachusetts. Brilliant person. Lived on his parents' organic farm all his life, and just really found a niche, and really enjoys traveling the country and teaching what he has learned. And this is a quote from him. Many people have correlated processed food, adulterated foods, genetically modified foods, and foods that have carcinogens and negative to their own personal well-being. Those who are attentive to these facts have begun to source better quality, more natural, organic, local, and other types of foods that perhaps their great-grandparents ate, with the understanding that there is an inherent value in simple, natural, healthy food. The only problem with this move towards healthier food is that even though one may be able to buy a bag of organic carrots or a local fresh tomato, the actual nutrient levels in these crops vary dramatically with farmer, season, and seed. The average human body contains something on the order of 4 trillion cells. Between 60 to 70% of these cells should replace themselves every 6 months. That means that about 15 billion cells in your body are replacing themselves every day. Each of those cells has a nucleus in it that contains your DNA. In each strand of DNA requires at least 45 separate minerals to replicate itself properly. The numbers quickly become more than the average person wants to spend too much time thinking about. But the point is that the nutrients in your food, which is what your body uses to build itself with, constantly have a key role to play in your overall health. As your body begins to find itself without the key minerals it needs to go through its biological process completely, it begins to degenerate. Grant made a statement recently that comes to mind when I read this about Paul. Paul thought he had it right. He was pursuing that with every ounce of energy in his body. Paul, in his pre-conversion life, had obedience to the Torah, but did not have the light of Torah. We need to have both. Just like what he was saying, we need to have both the cleanliness and everything else in the food, plus we have to have the nutrition. So we desire to eat clean food, but we must also consider the nutritional value of what we bring into our bodies. I have another quote from a gal named Anna Bogdanova. She writes on a website for startups and venture capital. And she was writing regarding a prepackaged juicer. Any juicers out here? Yep, got one. We've got people that come to our farm that are big juicers. But I really like her perspective on how she sees the overall effect this product could have on how we think of food. And I correlate that to holiness, to being holy, to protecting ourselves, what comes into our senses and through our gates. She says, I think the whole juicerol, that's the product she's talking about, phenomenon is really symptomatic of how misguided and removed nutrition is becoming. And it's all based on the presumption that eating well and eating right somehow takes a lot of time and effort. The Soylent, it's a meal in a bottle hype, is based on this. But this approach simply removes people further and further away from the reality of the food they eat It comes in a close, pristine package, the contents of which aren't even visible. It erases the fact that food grows in the soil and feeds on the soil. It's part of our ecosystem and part of our culture. I think this concept of food as an abstraction, not tied to the reality of the earth or the labor that goes into it, is what promotes conspicuous consumption and a disregard for our common environment. For me, it is actually the opposite of mindful nutrition. I believe that it's this kind of mindful consideration that she writes about, that being holy is all about. What I am bringing into my body through any of my gates that might negatively change the way I perceive my world. And sometimes it doesn't even look like it's wrong, but if you look at it and consider what you're looking at and reading and bringing in, you realize that, no, that shouldn't be coming in. Need to close the gate a little tighter. Slide 8, Tim. Rudolf Steiner, I mentioned earlier, I consider him and this may be way off base, but I consider him a prophet of nature. I don't know if that is even a reality, but he's just someone that I think God has given some special insight into some nature aspects and agriculture, things like that. He's kind of an Einstein of agriculture. You know, back in the 1800s, he was doing things that people just kind of couldn't get their head around. Now, in the time we're at now, people are looking back at that and saying, yeah, you know what, that really does make some sense. And here's a quote from him. Now a farm comes closest to its own essence when it can be conceived of as kind of an independent individuality, a self-contained entity. And although we are part of a family, may it be our born into or adopted family, social family or faith family, we also have our own essence or independent individuality. We are called to be holy people, and that involves both a group effort and an individual effort. As a certified organic grower, we must know and document the source of anything that we bring into our farm, and I mean anything. And my wife has a big stick, and if I don't document everything, she chases me around the farm with it. Organic seeds, organic potting soil must be pure earthly substances, or they must be approved by the Organic Materials Review Institute. Just like anything coming into our being needs to be approved by God's word. On May 10th, our farm will be inspected by a Cohen, not a priest, Mark Cohen, that is. Mark is the organic certification inspector that will make sure we comply with the physical requirements of being an organic, set-apart grower. And then I want to introduce you to another friend of mine. Never met him, but I read him every day. Derek Lehman is a former rabbi. He's a Messianic Jew, and I really like what he writes about and how he writes. And this is a quote from his blog discussing the book by Chaim Potok, The Chosen. Anybody read The Chosen? I haven't. Sounds like a phenomenal book. So here's a quote from Derek regarding The Chosen. The point of life is to achieve holiness in everything, in sleep, in work, in eating, in being. I have to say this ideal only appeals to people who understand holiness, not as the oppressive goal of judgmental religion, but the freeing aspiration of lonely souls to find the light of the universe. For Rabbi Israel ben Eliezer, the founder of Hasidism, it was apparent that God was everywhere and that everything, including sleeping and eating, were done in his presence. A hard shell covered the spark of divine light in us, and the only way to transcend that shell was to pray honestly and sincerely and often. He found nature to be the place where we most easily find enlightenment, piercing the shell with our prayers. These words reminded me of another lonely soul, Brother Lawrence. Anybody read Brother Lawrence? He's a monk. I don't know when he lived. It was back maybe 1700s. He wrote the book is called The Practice of the Presence of God. I recommend it. It's a small book, easy read, but really powerful. Brother Lawrence practiced doing everything in his daily life as if he was doing it in the presence of God. He created a rhythm in his life solely centered around being holy before God. And a lot of what he did in the monastery was simple tasks, washing dishes, cooking, things like that. But he was always doing it in the presence of his Creator. We need rhythm in our life. I need rhythm in my life. I need rhythm on my farm. I'm feeling that more and more. And here's another blog post by a gal named Lisa. And I really like what she says about rhythm. Rhythm is really about balance, finding our own, finding our way to breathe through the day, to be calm and present, bring attentive awareness to our lives. Rhythm is flow, a feeling that we are moving in and out energetically with the needs of the day. Rhythm is finding rest and at a time for pulling back in after having been out in stimulating activity. Anybody feel they need rhythm? More rhythm? In the third year of being a grower and developing our market gardening business, I find myself longing for a rhythm. Rhythm brings with it a sense of structure and routine. We are busy doing, learning, correcting what we've learned and done, and doing again differently. Up to this point, the rhythm has just not been a luxury for Renee and I on the farm. Our hope is that we can develop our rhythm in the next season, which will then allow us to experience a little more joy in our love of gardening. And I go back to Derek Lehman again regarding rhythm. I shared it with Grant on an email, and he had me read it in our discipleship study, and I just thought it was appropriate to read this morning. He says, reading the Bible should be a rhythm, not a treasure hunt or a school lesson. Here's what I mean, first in the positive sense and then describing what Bible reading should not be. A rhythm is a cadence that moves us, a pulse we live by. It repeats in cycles. We find ourselves moving with it. The effect of rhythm on a person is powerful, irresistible. There are ways of making a reading of the Hebrew Bible a rhythm. But first, let me explain what should not be our method. People reading the Bible in general, and even more Christians reading the Old Testament, are often engaged in hunting for treasure. The goal is to find that poster verse, the one that is worthy of making into a piece of art and hanging on the wall. I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your good and not harm, to give you a future and a hope. If only we could find more verses like this one. Instead of 10 cubits was the length of a frame, and a cubit and a half the breadth of each frame. Poster verses are rare, mundane, gory, and troubling verses, and more common. One common side effect of the treasure hunt method is the disillusionment with the Bible and the abandonment of its use altogether. Excitement comes less and less over time, as one has already discovered the commonly known treasures of a biblical inspiration. This approach lacks a rhythm that syncs the Bible with life. Longtime readers might suspect I would be a fan of the school lesson approach. Get out your reference books, select a portion of text, parse phrases and sentences, examine the use of keywords in different contexts, a word study, excavate ancient contexts that illuminate the background and concepts of a passage of Scripture. I do like all these things, Derek says, and I do engage in them, but separate from a rhythm, they too fall short. Discoveries are disconnected from life. While academic is a word I appreciate, the Bible should be more than academic. Academic tools should serve a larger agenda in our lives and not become an end in themselves. End of quote. I believe we are called to be spiritual market gardeners, not only producing fruit for ourselves, but producing the best possible fruit that can be shared with anyone and everyone that we have opportunity to do so. They call the style of gardening we do intensive gardening. It is referred to as intensive because you must be purposeful, intentional, efficient, and proactive. Instead of sowing a single row of lettuce or beets or carrots, you sow a row of five that are spaced about 6 inches apart. This planting method maximizes production and leaves no space for weeds. You must invest in the best tools and learn from the experienced ones that started before you. I believe that we are called to be intensive spiritual gardeners, producing fruit that is nourishing to people, that they will want to know what we did to produce such tasty fruit. Yeshua spoke to this many times in great detail. Here's a few to consider. John 15:1-8. I am a true grapevine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit, and he prunes the branches that do bear fruit, so they will produce even more. You have already been pruned and purified by the message I have given you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. Yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask for anything you want, and it will be granted. When you produce much fruit, you are my true disciples. This brings great glory to my Father. Matthew 5:43. You have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives us sunlight to both the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. If you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even pagans do that. But you are to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. I had a few thoughts regarding that scripture, regarding the rainfall and the sun on both the evil and the good. God has purpose in both evil and good. Hard for us to grasp that. Many indigenous plants that we consider to be weeds have incredible medicinal and healing properties to the soil and to us as God creating them to be. So some of the things that you're cursing, pulling out of the garden, some people, like my wife Renee, will find that those are good. Those are good things. Those are friends. They may be where we don't want them, but they may be serving a purpose that we don't understand. Just like that person at the office or somebody that you're connected to that just drives you crazy. There's purpose in that. Have you ever worked in your flower beds or vegetable gardens trying to defeat that return of Canadian thistle? Renee actually has a few beds filled with this dreaded weed. Their roots replenish potassium in the soil that has been depleted over the years. When the thistle has done its job, it would become dormant and not grow until it's needed again. It serves its purpose. Matthew 7, you can enter God's kingdom only through the narrow gate. The highway to hell is broad and its gate is wide for the many who choose that way. But the gateway to life is very narrow and the road is difficult, and only a few will find it. Yes, we are to work towards a surrendered life, one that is about doing the Father's will. But we need to find a balance, a rhythm, and pray that the Spirit will help us to do this without the stress of regret or worry. Matthew 11, then Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. So this final piece that I want to talk about, I want to preface it a little bit with some of Grant's teachings from a few weeks ago on Genesis 21. Grant talked about the fine structured constant, number 137. Quantum particles can move forward or backwards. Quantum particles can be in two places at one time. And what affects one will immediately affect the other light years away. Quantum particles can move in and out of existence. Quantum mechanics operate more spiritual principle. They operate more by spiritual principles than by physical principles. Quantum particles behave in certain ways when observed, and if not watched, they no longer exist. The Hebrew word Kabbalah also shares the number 137 as its numerical value. Kabbalah is the ancient Jewish tradition of mystical interpretation of the Bible. Hey, Tim, will the TED Talk work?
No.
It won't. Oh. Well, then. Is it really 12 o'clock?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we don't need the TED Talk. That's good. So what I can do is I can close with my final piece of scripture. What the TED Talk was a fellow named Brian Greene, G-R-E-E-N-E, and it's about about string theory. Very, very interesting. And it kind of goes another step with the 137 and quantum particles, quantum mechanics, and all that kind of stuff. And it's amazing. My belief as science moves forward is that we are becoming very close to science bumping right into God's face. And it'll be so obvious that they can't deny it. And I think we are awesomely close to that now. So I want to close with some wisdom from Solomon. Ecclesiastes 11:4. If you wait for perfect conditions, you will never get anything done. God's ways are as mysterious as the pathway of the wind and as the manner in which a human spirit is infused into the little body of a baby while it is yet in its mother's womb. Keep on sowing your seed, for you never know which will grow. Perhaps it all will. I thank you.